Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
One of the many tragic aspects of the Civil War was the destruction of parts of the forecourts. With that, all sorts of records. Michael Feuer is an architect, and for some years he's been intrigued as exactly how this happened. The result is his book, The Battle of the Forecourts. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you?
Now, I suppose at the time everybody knew something was brewing. Was there a logic to choosing the forecourts for the initial battle?
Well, the forecourts had to be where the battle was going to occur, because that's where the anti-treaty IRA decided that they would set up their headquarters, because their place in Parnell Square was a bit tight and cramped. You know, nowadays, you know, the flat I'm in is too tight. I need a bigger place. So they selected the forecourts, and they simply occupied the forecourts about a week before the courts were to begin. And they occupied it because they were going to do a lot of things there. And they had a lot of soldiers that they had to barrack. And it was an ideal place. And all the officers had very nice offices up in the judges' quarters and things like that. But they were preparing for an invasion of Northern Ireland.
And presumably they knew they would be attacked, or that the government
would try to...
They were
hoping the Brits would attack them. The real hope of Rory O'Connor was that the Brits would attack.
Yeah.
And if the Brits attacked, that's when the armies would get back together again. The anti-treaty IRA and the pro-treaty IRA would join again once more in a glorious battle against the Brits once more.
Right.
But the Brits held off. In fact, very narrowly. Very narrowly.
So they were kind of hoping for some sort of rerun of the GPO.
Yes.
Essentially. Exactly. And why did the Brits hold off? And was that through advice from Michael Collins et al. That, you know, don't rush into this?
The biggest advice came from General Macready, who was the British officer in command of the remaining British forces here at the time. Mm. There were 5,000 British soldiers parked or camped in the Phoenix Park. And he was, after Henry Wilson had been assassinated, there was absolute furore over in the House of Commons and all the rest. And everybody wanted, in fact, they even sent ships, they got Royal Navy ships organised to go east over to Dublin, because there were going to be a lot of prisoners once they got back into action. And Macready was in an awful state, because he said, that's exactly what they want you to do. But they sent him back to Dublin saying, get ready, because you're going to have to, we're going to give you the order to attack.
Mm.
And he started to put things in place. But at the last minute, I think Churchill realised that it was going to be bad news. And also Collins said, you know, if you do that, that's the end. So the Brits didn't attack, but there was a bit of a problem. The anti-treaty IRA kidnapped the second in command of the National Army and took him to the forecourts. And of course, you know, that's the end. So something had to happen. Collins had been holding back for months. Griffith, of course, was very much wanted to go in there and get them out a long time back. And they were there for nearly 3 months at this stage.
Yeah.
And finally, when the second in command was kidnapped and taken to the forecourts, said, well, we've got to get them out. So they issued an ultimatum. Leave, please. And the ultimatum was ignored.
Mm.
And the battle started.
Rory O'Connor, was he a zealot? Was he a strategic thinker? Especially if we're 3 months there and they're not getting the result that they want.
That's a difficult question, because I'm not an historian, Sean.
Yes.
I'm somebody who simply became intrigued by things that I had read over the years that I assumed were correct. When I looked into the technical data, the architect who rebuilt the forecourts, in his material, it became clear that the great explosion didn't take place in the public records office at all.
Yeah.
In fact, there were no explosives in the public records office at the time of the explosion. And I said, this is peculiar, because I've been told by all the historians that this is the case. And the more I looked into it, the more I found that there were a lot of things that weren't actually worked out. So I got an explosives engineer, and we did a lot of work on trying to analyse how much explosives, you know, involved, where did it take place, from the photographs and from contemporary reports. And then I got an artillery expert to talk to me about the use of the 18-pounder guns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a kind of forensic looking at the thing and surmising stuff. With regard to your original question, Rory O'Connor, Rory O'Connor was a fascist, I believe. I mean, he did say in March, when asked by a newspaper reporter, the fact that you say that the army knows better than the people does that mean you're after a dictatorship? And Rory O'Connor replied, well, if that's the way you see it, that's it.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, where are you going to go? And that's what he felt. Yeah, he felt that, you know, the army knew better. He knew better.
Yeah.
And the executive of the IRA knew better.
Yeah.
Than the other people.
Now, obviously, and this seems to be one of the starting points for, or the inspirations for writing your book, was this assumption we have that the Four Courts was blown to hell and we lost lots of a valuable trove of records and archives and all the rest of it. Now, that shelling that took place then of the Four Court, where did they shell it from?
They shelled it from across the river initially. The original idea, Emmett Dalton, who'd been in the war, young man who was only 21 or 22, he'd been in the war. He was a major when he left the British Army. Came back and joined the IRA. He reckoned the best way to get these guys out, there were about 180 fellas hunkered down in the Four Courts, barbed wire everywhere and sandbags. The best way to get them out is to use a little bit of artillery, light artillery, and it'll terrify the wits out of them. They'll come out. You know, when you're under bombardment, it's just the most terrifying thing that can happen to you. Didn't work. In the beginning, they scattered shell fire right across the entire facade, trying to kind of make sure that there wasn't a part of the building that wasn't touched by their shell fire. Then they had to change and said, look, they're not going to come out. So these amateur guys who, again, that's another thing I found in the books, they were laughed at. The lads who took over the artillery, who had never fired one of these guns before, they were kind of laughed at because they didn't seem to do anything. They did everything they were ordered to do. The scatter of shells was simply to try and terrify the guys. And then when it came to the moment when we've got to get the infantry in there, they picked two points in the buildings where they needed to make a breach. And the guys made the breach perfectly, with great difficulty. I mean, it wasn't an easy thing to do. Mm. They made the breach and the infantry went in, and that was the beginning of the end.
And you do describe in the book an explosion that takes place, or a series of explosions that take place, and paper flies up. It's like a blizzard of paper.
I've written myself about the fact that you know, the history of Ireland came down and, you know, burnt parchment all over Dublin. Didn't.
Mm.
What came down was the divorce court records, the land judges' records, and the other place, and the probate court records, because that's the place that blew up.
Yeah.
After that, and again, you know, some people might think it's a moot point. The records office did burn down. It did burn down. But there's two things to remember about this. I've shown that it burnt down. It wasn't deliberately set off by the anti-secretary IRA in the Four Courts at the time. But it did burn. And again, the only people who actually did any serious damage to the public records office was the National Army, because they shelled it to make a breach to get their men in.
Mm.
So the National Army can't, you know, walk away and say it wasn't anything to do with us.
Yeah.
But in fact, the explosion took place in the next building. The glass roof was blown off the top of the records office, and it did burn down. But there's one other interesting little piece about it that I discovered. The fire brigade didn't make any attempt to put it out. The excuse that Captain Myers gave was that he didn't want his men going into the Four Courts grounds because there were mines going off everywhere, as there were, and ammunition blowing up, and there were fires everywhere. The public records office faces onto Church Street. The side of it faces on the north end faces onto Church Street. It could easily have been semi-saved if they had simply stood in the street and poured water into it. But you see, a lot of the fire brigade men were members of the Citizen Army. And we know, there's evidence again in the book, that some of the Citizen Army men in the ambulances took away the lads from the Four Courts. And instead of having them delivered where they would be arrested, they were delivered to home.
Yeah.
So there was certainly, at very least, there was a sympathy amongst a lot of members of the fire brigade. Now, I'm not going to say anything about Captain Myers. He was in charge. But it's strange to think that the public records office burnt down because the fire brigade didn't make one attempt to turn a hose on it.
Were there any plans to escape while those men were in there?
Yes. Rory O'Connor said, we can get out through the sewers, he said. But Sean Lamass fell into one of the sewers and came out smelling pretty awful. And it turned out that when the tide is in the Liffey, the sewers fill up.
Mm.
So the tide happened to be in at the time they needed to get out. I mean, there's a lot of funny things like that. I mean, imagine Tom Barry. We all know Tom Barry is that West Cork IRA man, you know. Tom Barry tried to get into the Four Courts during the course of the siege, dressed as a nurse. And he was stopped.
Yeah.
And I can't comment on how the officer in the National Army, because they were leaving nurses and coming them on in and out all the time.
Yeah.
And they were, in fact, carrying messages in and out all the time and ammunition. You know, one of the things, the marvellous things about the beginning of the Civil War, nobody wanted to shoot anybody else. Nobody wanted to kill anybody else. So there was an enormous amount of ammunition fired, and the casualties were quite small. 7 or 8 in all were killed.
Yeah.
And that, those two, let's say the vast number of those people, let's say 6 of them, were killed in the heat of battle when they were bursting in through those holes they'd made in the walls. Dust everywhere, darkness, people throwing hand grenades. That's when the killing took place. But when they were shooting at each other, they were shooting over each other's heads. There was one guy in the that was firing at the public records office, one lad in the public records office. And a British Army man, an Irish guy in mufti, was standing behind and watching how he was doing. And he said, "Look, give me that gun. You're missing all the time." And the National Army man said, "Oh, no, you might kill the lad." So there was a lot of that happening. Yeah. They were doing everything they could. And the National Army men were giving handfuls of bullets to the common man women who were bringing things in and out of the forecourts for the lads inside. Can you imagine such a thing?
That's extraordinary.
And then one of the main men in the siege actually released Sean Lamass and 3 others, and Ernie O'Malley, when they were all captured and brought up to, they were briefly imprisoned in the distillery up behind. And he knew them all well, and he let 3 or 4 of them go because he didn't want to see them going to Mountjoy.
The book is called The Battle of the Four Courts. The author is Michael Feuer. Michael, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.